Well, hello. I'm happy to be here, as always. A couple of emails. I've found that answering emails, speaking about the content of emails in these meetings is helpful to me because it gives me something to talk about. And it gives me a platform from which I can try again to say something clear and simple and true about what it is I have to offer. The first email is, the subject of it is the downside of self-inquiry. I hear other teachers say things like acceptance, letting go, and so forth is a helpful realization, and that realization is just like taking the foot in the door. The next step is letting go more and more. If not letting go, it can be used as an escape technique. With acceptance, it gets deeper. Do you agree with these things? Can it be true? Well, you know, sure, let go if you can. I mean, but clinging is not the problem. The inability to let go is not the problem. And letting go is not the solution. Letting go is a gift of grace if it happens. If you can do it, do it. But clinging cannot interfere with your realization. The failure or the inability to let go or to accept or any of the other things that we are encouraged to do in the spiritual arena, the failure to do those things cannot interfere with your realization. The reason for that is because your life is your realization. In fact, the realization is that your life is your realization. The end of the journey, the end of the efforts to settle the issue of identity is the realization that your life, just as it is, as it's unfolding, as it's displaying itself, is precisely your realization, yourself made, well, real. Not real in a philosophical sense, but real in the sense of a manifested object. Subject to the next one is the human condition and the climate change. Can you reflect on the link, if there is one, between the climate change of this planet and the human condition of thinking that we are different persons? And how can self-inquiry make a difference for the planet? Well, you know, we are different persons. That's not all we are. But certainly in our life on this planet, we are different persons. But the madness that's at the heart of the darkness, the cause at the root of human stupidity, aggression, and greed, which, of course, are the aspects of us that create the activities and the choices that lead to such things as the degradation of the climate and the wastage of resources and all the other idiot things that we do as human beings. The cause of that is not separation. Separation isn't a problem, just as the life is not a problem. The cause is the conviction that I am in danger here, and this is rooted in the issue of identity, the unsettled issue of identity, of what am I, really. If we settle this issue, then all the energy devoted to protection and fear can be given over to some kind of intelligent evolutionary development of the entire human creature and its work. So long as the issue of identity is plagues us, bites at us, because that's what it feels like. It feels like it bites at us, this issue of the conviction that I am at stake here, the inferential conviction that I am in danger here. I either am in danger or I stand to get something here. Either way, that conviction is what gives rise to it all. And there's no work whatsoever that we can do in our understanding of things. For example, the sense of separation is a question of understanding. We seek to have some overriding, transformative, transcendent experience of oneness that will exclude separation and that will heal us and fix us once and for all. But the exclusion of separation cannot be the work of oneness. Cannot be. The exclusion of anything cannot be the work of oneness. The exclusion of things, as is the clinging to things, is predicated on the certainty that these things, such as separation, are what cause me problems and pain and confusion and stupidity. Or the clinging of things that we think cause me goodness and righteousness and right attitudes and so forth. So separation's not the problem, and neither is negativity and stupidity the problem. Greed really isn't the problem. These are all symptoms of the underlying conviction that this life is me. No more. The teaching, there is a teaching here, and there is a method here. The teaching is unbelievably simple. The teaching is that the issue of identity is all that needs to be settled. The issue of identity is all that stands in the way of the immediate and continuous recognition that, well, it stands in the way of our falling in love with these lives. Falling in love with these lives. That's what we fall in love with, these lives, as they are, and with all of their limitations and separations and so forth. When the issue of identity is settled, all misery and suffering disappears. Not all pain, not all stupidity, not all negativity, not all greed, not all aggression, but all of the fearfulness and anxiety and misery and suffering that underlie these characteristics of human behavior disappear. And as they disappear, so too fade away the terrible aspects of human behavior. Settle this and we settle everything. The rest of it is all... Actually, the rest of it is all a continuation of the vichara, a continuation of the endless exploration and... just the endless exploration of this endlessly changing, shifting display that is these lives. That is the realization. The method is equally simple and equally difficult to communicate. The method is to look at yourself as often as possible. And what makes it difficult to communicate is the fountain of confusion and misunderstanding and convictions and beliefs and so forth that attend even the suggestion, even the speaking of the word yourself. But none of that none of the confusion that arises when you hear the suggestion, look at yourself, none of that confusion can prevent you from initiating and reaping the benefits of the vichara. There is a sense of self that is present. There is a sense of me that is present. It is not small so that it can be contained within something. It is not new so that it can be recognized as some new arrival, some new development. It is you, just you, the you that permeates, underlies, contains, and envelops all thought, all bodies, all aspirations, all effort whatsoever. And all that's asked in the vichara is to settle the issue of identity by bringing attention to this sense of you. It's better to say the sense of you than the sense of self, probably. The means of communicating this method are developing in for me. Here's another one. John, I have several questions relating to the apparent conflicts between the role of feeling, in particular the sense of self in your teaching, and the role of truth, in particular the fact that I am here always. And, you know, this is a kind of a little longer email, so I'm going to answer things as I go along. The distinction between what my encouragement that you contact, perceive, feel, taste, whatever verb I use, the sense of self, and my encouragement that you recognize, taste, feel, and so forth, the what it feels like to be here, just that, what does it feel like to be here, both of these things are synonymous. In neither case is there any truth to it, and in neither case is there any real feeling to it. But it's so difficult for me to come up to develop some way of actually directly pointing you to say, look, 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 look here, that I just do the best I can. Here's the thing. You are here. Of that there can be no doubt. There's no matter what happens, no matter what philosophical or metaphysical arguments may arise within you, no matter what spiritual teachings may tempt you and interest you and excite you about in existence and so forth, the fact remains that you are here and that you cannot deny it. I mean, you can deny it, but you can't deny it inwardly. You can't deny it to yourself. You can't deny it in your heart that you are here. I ask you in the execution of the inquiry, in the execution of the vichara, to move your attention trying to find what it is here that makes it impossible for you to deny that you are here. Now, what it is here that makes it impossible for you to deny that you are here is precisely this sense of self that is too ordinary to stand out as a separate experience, as a separate thing. So in both cases I'm actually talking about the same thing. And talk of truth kind of gives me the hives. The people have been telling us what the truth is for thousands upon thousands of years, and the things that we have been told and the things we have read and sung and taken into our hearts have all enriched us in a sense, and rung true in a sense, and have all failed to actually have any effect on the underlying misery and suffering that is prevalent in human existence. Sometimes big, sometimes small, but always here, this undercurrent of dissatisfaction, of wanting something else, of conviction that if I can just get the next thing, that'll settle it for me. That'll reveal to me the truth. So talk of truth gives me hives. I'm not very fond of it. If there is truth to be had, you will see it for yourself. And anything that I try to tell you is the truth of who you are, or even to encourage you to find the truth of who you are, can only distract you from the actual practical work of the inquiry, which is just the simple mechanical moving of attention, searching for whatever it is that gives you certainty that you exist, and whatever it is that feels like you. Because it is direct contact with that that frees you finally, once and for all, of this underlying shadow of inference that says, I am at stake here. I am in danger here. I must be very careful about what thoughts are present, what desires are present, what opinions and judgments come and go. I must be very careful about how I look and how I think and what I want. That underlying shadow of inference that can't be seen, can't be directly addressed, you can't understand your way out of it. You can't think your way out of it. You can't reform your mind out of it. The only thing that will rid you of it is the repeated contact with reality, the reality of identity, which is to be found in the same direction, in the same location as the sense of self, as that which gives you the certainty that you exist. So the point of the whole work of the vichara has nothing to do with anything true, with truth and falsehood, or with spiritual and non-spiritual, or with anything of the kind. It has to do with merely bringing yourself in contact with reality, the reality of what you are, which is to be found in the same place as the sense of self. Boy, how I do go on. But you see, this is what I have this sense that if I could just once say this accurately, that my work would be effective. But I also know very clearly from my own experience in my own life and from my experience with all of those who have been with me over this time, I know very clearly also that really, really, none of that matters so long as we are trying to see reality, so long as we are looking for the sense of self, looking for the certainty of being and so forth. So long as that we are doing that, everything else will be taken care of. Because it's not the success that, it's not the success of the personality in attaining some end of getting the right spot or getting the right point to look at or any of that. It's not any of that, or understanding or any of it. It's not the success, the immediate success that counts. What counts is the movement of attention in that direction. What counts is the direct contact with the light of reality that results from moving attention in that direction. And the confirmation of that is not immediate. There's not something where, oh, I see now, there it is, that's it, that's the real me. The confirmation of that is to be found in the fact that the vichara continues, even if you decide you want to get rid of it, it continues, and that over time, sometimes a long time, sometimes a short time, but that over time, the sense that you are in danger here fades. The sense that you are at stake here fades. And life, over time, gradually, reveals itself to be everything you have ever wanted. That's the confirmation. And it doesn't, it's not instant. It's not seeing the right thing as opposed to the wrong thing. It's just trying to bring your attention instead of to all the thoughts about what you are and all the understandings about what you are and what you are not, trying to bring your attention directly in contact with you, just you, the you that is prior to all the rest. Moving on, I can't believe, sometimes I really... Moving on in this email, I've finished the first sentence, and maybe I can get through the rest of it without too much trouble. This person goes on, I spoke with you about a year ago during the Worldwide Satsang. Essentially, my question then, as it is now, was related to this issue. What I rather clumsily tried to express and what I would like to ask you again about now is that sense of self, or the feeling of I am, or the feeling of being, has three confusing components for me that seem to lie in contrast to the rest of your teaching. And again, it seems that way, but I don't care whether you look for the sense of self, you look for the feeling of I am, or you look for the feeling of being, or you look for the certainty of being here. If you look in that direction, which is can easily be determined to be the opposite of the direction you're accustomed to looking, everything will be taken care of. So one, this is back to the email, one, the first is that the sense of self, again for me, seems to increase and decrease. It is, in short, a feeling that seems to come and go, perhaps not entirely, but it clearly vacillates in terms of strength and potency. But you have related on countless occasions that our task, if I have understood you correctly, is to look at that which never changes. Well, yeah, and that's, look at that which never changes is another synonymous approximation of where attention belongs in the inquiry. Once you see that the whole purpose of the inquiry is to settle the issue of identity, it should clear up a lot of confusion about whether there are differences, I mean, between the sense of self, the sense of I am, and so forth, that which never changes. And I'll point out that I see that you see that you put in all caps, it seems to come and go. That's very, and perhaps not entirely. What vacillates in terms of strength and potency is the focus of your attention. The sense of self is always here. It's you. If I speak of the sense of self, I'm speaking of you. Just you. You are always here. You are the one thing that is never absent. Now, you are actually, in ordinary human life, you are rarely directly conscious of this you-ness that pervades everything. But when you try to move your attention, to direct your attention at it, then you can see very clearly you, just you. Going on, the second is that the sense of self, once more for me, is tied to what, for lack of better words, I would call spiritual experience. And see, that's what changes. That is, the greater the sense of self, the more bliss, the more happiness I experience. It is as if these qualities radiate from the self-sense itself, and which for me seem to radiate from the heart. But you have stressed that spiritual experiences and feelings of bliss and happiness are beside the point. They are beside the point. That doesn't mean they're not pleasurable or that they don't come. So, going on, the subtle suggestion, though perhaps not your intent, is that such experiences are unrelated to self-inquiry, which lead me to perhaps falsely conclude that I was pursuing a dead end by focusing on the being sense. That the inquiry was generating spiritual-like experience in me suggested that I wasn't actually practicing the inquiry. Was I actually attempting to see myself, or was I merely looking at some kind of subtle or ego-inflated self? These feelings are similar to the feelings I get by focusing on God, which lead me to the conclusion that I was focusing on yet another idea, albeit an idea that is somehow tied to being. But now you seem to be suggesting that it doesn't matter what you were looking at as long as the feeling of self is there, so you can focus your attention on that primary feeling. Yes, that's exactly what I'm saying. When I say that spiritual experiences are beside the point, it doesn't mean that they're not existent, that they don't appear, that they don't manifest, and they often manifest in conjunction with the inquiry. Once we start looking for looking into profound and fundamental matters, and incidentally, profound and fundamental matters that we have previously believed to be inconsequential, like me. Once we start looking at those matters, we can expect that, given the actual operation of the law of cause and effect, that something will occur. And it's not surprising that what sometimes occurs is spiritual-like experience, bliss, oceanic consciousness, emptiness, oneness of being, and so forth. But it's equally likely that it will trigger other spiritual-like experiences, such as desperation and hopelessness and unfulfilled yearning and helplessness, and all of which are equally spiritual experiences, equally part of the dance of the dyads that is the spiritual melodrama. Now, the appearance of these experiences, whether they be gorgeous and transcendental experiences or horrifying and hellish experiences, the appearance of these experiences is beside the point, not because they're good and not because they're bad, but because, as you say in the end, as long as the feeling of self is there, so that you can focus your attention on that primary feeling, the rest of it doesn't matter. They come and go. They bounce out of nowhere and they sink back into nowhere. The only thing that about them that is at all relevant to the vichara, the only thing about them is that they are the old gods come back to try to, and forget I said that. Metaphorically, they are the old gods come back to try to woo us back into the fruitless and useless and foolish search for transformation and transcendence. This is metaphoric. Please, don't come back to me with something about the old gods. This is metaphoric. The actual fact is that the old gods, like the spiritual experiences, whether they are experiences of heaven or hell, all of it, the distraction in all of it, is our own doing. Is the endless unfolding of the the consequences of our actions. And their only relevance is their tendency to distract us and to call us back into the old ways of looking at things and back into the old desires and the old convictions about what will fix me and what won't fix me. And even that is beside the point, you see. Even our going back into that whole realm is beside the point. Over time, that realm gets old and stale. Even the bliss, even the emptiness gets old and stale in time compared to the continuous awareness of this identity that underlies it all. So the idea that every time we are drawn away into spiritual experiences, whether good or bad, or drawn away into understandings and confusions and all of that, the idea that every time we are drawn away from the vichara, we are actually falling asleep again or backsliding or falling into old habits or whatever, that's just another idea, another thought. The fact is that the continuous bringing of attention in the direction of the sense of self, in the direction of the you-ness, can you hear that? The you, Y-O-U-ness. That, over time, is what does the work. And it makes the only time that counts is the time, is that time. The rest of the time that we spend doing whatever it is we do to make ourselves happy or miserable, that's beside the point. It doesn't have to be stopped. It doesn't have to be kept going. Okay, the letter goes on. But if this is true, that is, if it's true that if it's true that I gather that what was being referred to here is the last sentence, if it's true that I seem to be suggesting that it doesn't matter what you are looking at as long as the feeling of self is there, so you can focus your attention on that primary feeling. But if this is true, what is the difference between using, say, God as the vehicle through which I focus on the sense of being, and using I am or even the ego in order to get there? Obviously, I am quite confused. Hopefully, my question is clear enough for you to be able to offer a response. Well, there is, God is another word that kind of gives me the hives. There may be no difference in using God, but there certainly is no difference in using I am or especially even ego to get there. I would kind of forget about the God business for the time being, because what we're after here is not God consciousness or not union with God or any of the other goals that we're prone to follow. It's not that those goals are bad or wrong or that they should not be followed, but God, like many things, is beside the point to the inquiry. The inquiry is entirely devoted to settling the issue of identity. Since the issue of identity means settling the issue of you, it's much more direct and I suspect much more bears fruit more quickly if what we are looking for and what we are looking at is ourself. The I am is I. The sense of being is me. The identity is me. It's all me. Ego is me. Now, pertaining to ego, it's an interesting that you should raise the matter of ego as a doorway into contact with reality, since ego, although, well, I'm not going to get into the ego business, but there is at any time when there is present very strong experience, and whether it's experience of heaven or experience of hell, at any time that there is the presence of very strong experience, there is an especially negative experience. We can find within us a kind of knot of claustrophobia and contraction and limit and neediness and helplessness and wanting and not getting and fear and all of that, a little bundle of joy masquerading as all of that. That bundle of misery, same thing, that bundle of misery is what we are accustomed to referring to as ego. And the fact of the matter is that it is extremely useful in the vichara. If you can find that without confusing yourself as to the fact that it's something that appears within you and therefore can't be you, and other metaphysical considerations like that. If you can just move your attention to that little bundle of misery and greed and lack, move it to that. Hold it tightly with your attention. There actually is no better avenue whereby the personal consciousness can come in contact with the light of reality than through that bundle of misery and suffering. It actually is kind of a thing on its own as to its usefulness and effectiveness in the vichara. I would leave God alone. God gets along very well without our interference. And moving on, three, this person goes on, finally, you have emphasized that the cure to the false belief that you are this life is the truth. But the sense of self does not strike me as self-apparently true in any way. It is, in my experience, limited to being just another feeling. A primary feeling, to be sure, and a feeling tied to spiritual states of joy and happiness, but still just a feeling which entails no apparent truth value. On the other hand, that I am here, another aspect of your teaching, seems self-evidently true, yet entails no apparent feeling. How is the fact that I am here and the feeling of being related? Well, there is no truth to either of them. That kind of relates them, knits them together. They are, both of them, objects that are located in the direction of reality. And by reality, I mean you. They are both of them that are located in a direction different from the direction we are accustomed to looking for answers to the questions about what I am, or what I should be, or what I want to be, or what the world wants me to be. They are, along with the ego thing, all in the direction of reality. Attention brought in the direction of anything that can somehow be described as you, like the certainty of being here, the sense of self, the bundle of misery. Movement of attention in the direction of anything that can be seen to be, seem to be made up of this me-ness that I speak of, this which is the same as the you-ness that I speak of. Moving in direction in that attention is what does the work. It is what brings personal consciousness in direct contact with the light of reality. It produces, that direct contact produces no immediate change in anything. It produces no sudden burst of enlightenment and everything's better. It is like drinking water. It is like taking medicine. It is the repeated exposure to that light. And light, of course, is invisible. It's the repeated exposure to that light that gradually eradicates this underlying conviction that I'm at stake here, that there can be something wrong and something right about my life that is profoundly important to me. It's that contact with the light. It has nothing to do with truth. It has nothing to do with the difference between the truthiness of the sense of self or the truthiness of the certainty of being. All those things are vehicles, are tools that we use to bring our attention in the right direction. And I'm going to finish this email up. After our last talk, I had actually given up on trying to pay attention to the I am feeling and instead have tried to focus on the present moment, a task which has for me seemed to be fruitless. Rather than relying on feeling, I instead attempted to somehow, though I was never really clear on what I was trying to do or how I should be doing it, somehow look at the present moment and ignore feeling entirely. But now I hear in your more recent teachings an emphasis on feeling, and I am left wondering if I'm not somehow dividing two aspects of your teaching which somehow are meant to be whole. I think I probably answered that in all of the carrying on that I did about the rest of this email. It's actually not two aspects of my teaching. It's two aspects of the hearing of the teaching. Okay, I'm going to let the emails go for now. There's a couple more, but I think that if those who wrote them are here, you will see that much of what you had to say, which goes to the question of how do I know I'm doing it right and what do I really look for and things like that, I think have been answered as good as I can, at least in this moment, by this last email. There's something else I want to kind of talk about just a little bit, and then I'm going to shut up. I'm not really sure that it's something else, but here it is. We have been led to believe, or we have led ourselves to believe for a very long time, In fact, it's I get the sense that it's something that really we don't even give second thought to. It seems so obvious that the reason that I am miserable, the reason that I suffer, and the reason that I am fraught with such stupidity and aggression and greed, and the reason that I can't do anything right, and the reason that I can't accomplish what I want to accomplish, and the reason that the thing that stands between me and a final realization of truth, of a final settling of all the misery of human life. The reasons that this is so, the reason I am so miserable, has to do with the way the life is. And by the life, I mean everything you can see, hear, think about, remember, project in the future, everything whatsoever, every thought, every energetic sensation, every body sensation, every over time, as it unfolds over time. That's what I mean by the life, the personal consciousness. The personal consciousness is the only consciousness we know. It's really the only consciousness that we have access to, and it really is the world, right? It's our world. It's our inner world. And we somehow have, well, it's obvious why. I mean, really, you see that the whole thing about the inference is that the inference is justifiable. The mistake is justifiable. It's not like we just make it up out of whole cloth. It's everything in our experience kind of reinforces this underlying inference that I'm at stake here, that this is all there is to me, and that not only am I at stake here, and not only is there a lot of experiences I don't like, and not only am I really flawed, and I wish I were not, but in the end, I'm going to die here, and I am frightened that I am going to live this life, get finished with this life, and fall into the grave without ever knowing what this life was about. And the thing that the viewpoint, the kind of spiritual, philosophical viewpoint that is pretty much universal, is that the cause of all of this is something about the way that I'm living my life. Something about the way that I think things. Something about the things that I want. Something about the stupidity that plagues me, or the procrastination that is my strong tendency, or my inability to feel things, or, you know, a whole range of things that can be wrong with the way I'm living my life. I'm thinking the wrong things, I'm wanting the wrong things, I'm going about getting what I do want in the wrong way, I don't understand what's going on. If I understood even. But understanding refuses to come. The correction of my wrongful thoughts and wrongful desires refuses to manifest. I am attached and I cling to things. I don't know how to let go of things. I don't know how to be free of things. I don't know how to rid myself of wanting stuff that I know my wanting of it is wrong. I don't know how to rid myself of wanting stuff that I no longer really want, but I don't know how to stop wanting it. There's something wrong with the way I'm living my life. There's something wrong with my body. There's something wrong with my mind. There's something wrong with the circumstance I find myself in. There's something that needs to be corrected about the way my life is living, about the way I am living my life, in order that I can, before I die, at least understand, at least that, so that anything that comes along that promises me some help in those matters, some support and help in finding a way to transcend or transform or reform my mind and my life to show me how I can become more quiet or more calm, or how I can have good thoughts instead of bad thoughts, or how I can live my life better, how I can think better, how I can empty my mind, how I can be free of the endless yada, yada, yada that goes on all the time, judging me, telling me what I should do, telling me what I should be, telling me what's wrong. Anything that comes along that promises some help in the arena of transformation or transcendence or even reform, that is what makes sense to me, and that is what I go to. Meditation, yoga, therapy, realization procedures, enlightenment practices, pranayama. All of that. That's what I go to. And if I in my spiritual life, if I come upon circumstances in which trigger great experiences of understanding or bliss or emptiness or silence, I know that those are the things that I want. Those are the things that have to stay, because when those experiences are present, for that moment there is no suffering, or no apparent suffering. If I look closer, I have to confess that there might be a little nagging resentment that my life experience shows me that this experience too, the bliss, the silence, the emptiness, must go. But if it didn't go, then that must be what I want. There's something wrong with the way I'm living my life. There's something wrong with my thoughts. There's something wrong with my desires. There's something wrong with my body. There's something wrong with my family. There's something wrong with my circumstance. There's something wrong that I can do something, if I can correct the things that are wrong, if I can reform them, change them, correct them, or transform them, or transcend them, then, finally, I'll understand. Then, finally, this whole madness of human existence will be settled for me. Then, finally, before I fall into the grave, I will get what I came for. But I tell you that there's nothing whatever wrong with the way you're living your life. That the problem is not to be found there. And if the problem is not to be found there, the solution can't be found there either. I tell you that there's nothing wrong with your thoughts. There's nothing wrong with them being here. There's nothing wrong with them being gone. There's nothing wrong with their content. There's nothing wrong with the look of them, the feel of them. I tell you, there's nothing wrong with your desires. There's nothing wrong with what you want. There's nothing wrong with your resentment at not getting what you want. Or at least, that's not the problem. And if it's not the problem, then nothing that you do about that can settle matters for you. I tell you that there's nothing wrong with the way you're living your life. There's nothing wrong with your circumstance. There's nothing wrong with your family, with your friends, with the society that you participate in. And nothing wrong with any of that. There might be things that are wrong with it in the small sense, but there's nothing about any of that that actually is the cause of the underlying fearfulness and conviction that there's something wrong. No matter how good things are, there's something wrong. There's nothing in the way you live your life that you can change that will solve the profound and fundamental issue here. The issue that gives rise to it all. The issue that that underlies the entire stupidity of humanity. The entirety of humanity's stupidity and self-hatred and greed and all of it. And switching to being generous instead of greedy, even if you could accomplish that, that would not do it either. Nothing that you do in the way you live your life will settle the most profound and fundamental issue at all that underlies the entirety of the... You know, we start out thinking that we know what's going on, and we operate from that assumption. And that assumption is entirely false. So it's not surprising that everything we try to do based on that assumption will fail or will turn out to be not what we wanted it to be. On the other hand, if there is an issue that underlies it all that actually can be settled, can be resolved once and for all, if there is such a thing, then surely once that issue is settled, everything that I do in the way of reforming my life, reforming the way I think about things, the way I look about things, the way my mind is, the way it operates, and so forth, that everything I do then, coming from an absence of any profound and fundamental existential issue plaguing me, everything I do then within my life will have a chance of being effective in a way that it never had the chance when it was based on an assumption that just is a lie. Not a lie like malevolent. Just not true. Just absolutely false. And that assumption, that underlying assumption, is, and I have taken to using this, and I'm going to keep using it until I get tired of it, it is an inference. It's not ego. It's not, I don't know, not God. It's not the devil. It is an inference, an unexamined inference. The inference that comes from bursting into this life without warning and without a guidebook and without any sense whatsoever is going on and concluding very quickly, even before I had the opportunity to have words to reflect upon this conclusion, concluding very quickly that this life is me, this life is all there is to me, and that I am at stake here. I've got to get this right. The life is everything. I've got to get it right. It's an inference. It can't be seen. It can't be dug out. It can't be rooted out. It can't be killed. It can't be... It's an inference that underlies everything. And I tell you, it's not true. There's nothing wrong with the way you live your life. There's nothing wrong with the way your life lives itself. There might be things that it could do better or do worse, but the way that the life unfolds has nothing whatsoever to do with the feeling that there's something wrong here. There's something I haven't gotten. There's something I really don't want to die until I get. And I tell you that underlying inference that this life is me, and that I am at stake here, and that I am in danger here, and that I have to be very careful and watch very carefully to figure out what's right and what's wrong and what can I do about it and how should I be and what should I be. This underlying inference that gives rise to the current of fearfulness and anxiety that's ever present, sometimes big, sometimes almost unnoticeable, but ever present. This inference can be eradicated only by bringing the personal consciousness that is infused and rests on it and continuously into contact with the reality of identity, which is you. That's the vichara. There's much more to the vichara than that. But that's the self-inquiry. That's the beginning of the making the vichara conscious. Bringing personal consciousness through the medium of attention into contact with you. You. And the direction in which this contact can be found is variously known as the sense of self, or the I am, or the certainty of being, or the here-ness of you, here, or God knows what else I might come up with in the future, but all not a transmission of truth, but a communication of direction. And what I have learned in my own life and what I have learned in the experience of those who have been with me is that if you will just do that without regard to the fact that you don't have a clue what the sense of self is, or without the regard to the fact that you have too many clues what the sense of self is, if you will just do that, that will do all the work. And the confirmation will be, first of all, the continuation of the vichara. In fact, the final recognition that the vichara is, well, it is the life. The investigation is the life. That the life is the realization of reality. The life is exactly what we are seeking when we seek enlightenment and self-realization and awakening. That's what the life is. Finally, what's seen is that the vichara is the sole activity of identity, that the sole realization, that this life is the realization that we have sought as enlightenment or self-realization or awakening or any other metaphor for it, that the life itself is that, just as it is, and that the vichara is precisely that unending exploration of the infinitely arising, shifting, changing, kaleidoscopic display that is your life. And then the whole, this is why Ramana said once to someone that on the day, there will come a day when you will laugh. And that day is exactly like this day. The same. You will laugh at how wild it is that we should seek everywhere for the very thing that we have concluded is the thing that stands in the way of attaining what we have sought. We seek everywhere for realization, believing that my life is what stands in the way of realization when the life is the realization. So here's the deal. You can forget all of that. You don't need to understand anything that I have said. Much of what I say poorly and makes it very difficult to be understood by anybody. I do the best I can, and I actually work to try to become better at it. But you can forget all that anyway. All of that has no purpose other than to persuade you and to offer to you as clearly as I possibly can this amazing, infallible method whereby you can find yourself totally in love with your life. You can find yourself free of the anxiety and fearfulness that arise from the conviction that you're at stake here, that you got to do something right before you die, that you got to understand, that you got to do anything. To offer you this absolutely unbelievably magical thing that turning attention, looking for you, strip away all of the spiritual stuff, strip away all of the sense of self and the certainty of being and the I am and all of that. Just strip it away, throw it away. If you will just look as often as you can for you, just you, look for you, look for yourself. If you will do that, no matter whether you feel you're succeeding, feel you're failing, or feel confused as to whether you're succeeding or failing, in the end, that inquiry, that vichara, will do the work and will rid you of this underlying inference and this and its consequence of the belief that the life is a problem. Okay. I can't, you know, I often think, well, you know what, I'm just not going to say anything today. And but I guess I'm just, must be Prarabdha, must be according to the predispositions of this individual. I just talk and talk and talk. And now I'm going to shut up. I'd be happy to speak to any of you. Just, I guess, ask Carla. Okay? I don't want to, I'm not saying this in order to make you think that you need to speak to me, because you really don't, but I want to make sure that you know that I am here and happy to speak with you, and all you have to do is tell Carla that you want to speak, and that'll happen, and I will be here until, as long as you see my name here, I'm here, okay?
Nigel is calling from Spain.
Hi, Nigel. It's good to see you, or see your name anyway.
Yeah, hi, John. Yeah, it's always good to be here, man. Great. Lovely talk. I'm just reporting in. You know, I've been, life's been trucking along very nicely. Maybe smoothly, I don't know. But I just wanted to report in something that's been happening, that's been quite, I don't know what the word is, I don't really know how to describe it, but it's a very, it almost comes as a voice actually, and there's a, you know, you can be trucking along in life and a sensation comes up, maybe a disagreeable sensation, they're the ones that usually create the strongest reactions, and there's just an immediate voice on the arrival of the sensation that's that. And it's almost like, well, it is a voice, as it is, saying that there's nothing you can do. And as you said in your talk earlier on, you were saying that letting go is not something you do. It's just grace. It's just something that happens. And that's just exactly how this is. It's just something that's happening. It's just something that's leaving it. That's it, really. That's my reporting. But it's something that's happened quite strongly and quite dramatically, and it's having quite an effect in the way I move around.
Well, that's really interesting, Nigel. I think that it sounds familiar to me, but what I think is that what you're saying is the mechanism whereby the aspects of the apparatus of the personal consciousness and personality and so forth are correcting themselves. You know, in some cases it might take a different form, look a little bit differently, but what sounds to me is happening is that the thought is, because it's a voice, but of course a voice is a thought too. My voice in your head right now is a thought in your head right now. And so that it manifests as a voice, but it is a thought manifesting as a voice, which seems to be correcting a previously kind of self-harming, you know, the craziness that we do to ourselves. So I'm kind of tickled about that. Sounds good to me. And I also want to say, you know, really, and to everybody, really, life, we'd say life is smooth, you know, and I guess I would say the same thing, but life really is always smooth. I mean, it just kind of unfolds as it does. Circumstances come and go as they do, good, bad, and indifferent. And but nothing gets in its way. It's not like it's unfolding, gets snagged on anything. It always unfolds very smoothly. What's not smooth is our endless monitoring and supervision of it. That says, oh no, not that. That's no good. That shouldn't be. Or oh yeah, I want that. Or and that is what gives rise to the feeling of bumpiness, the dukkha, the off-center axle. Not the unfolding of life itself. It just goes along, just as easy as you can please, right?
Yeah. I know where you're coming from, and I guess that's what I'm trying to express. Really, it's. That smoothing out of the, the whole idea of I can do something about, or this desire to want to do something about everything that takes place in some way, to want to, I don't know, get rid of things and acquire things or change things or wish it was this. You know, when that starts to be seen as fruitless, as something that just can't be done, there's just life and whatever comes and goes, as you said before, you know, it becomes more and more clear, more and more simple, and it's true. Even through the rough patches, you know, my illness is still around, still kicking and doing its stuff, you know, and it doesn't matter. It really doesn't make that much difference, you know. It doesn't. It comes and it goes just like everything else. So, and I just want to say thanks. You and Carla, and it's really beautiful what you're doing. Your teaching's great. I'll be here as long as you're there.
Well, you're very welcome, and Carla also conveys her view that you're very welcome and she loves you. It's interesting, these things that happen in the life. Everything whatsoever that we experience and that we relate to in one way or another, a thought, a voice, a circumstance, losing a job, gaining a job, falling in love, falling out of love, all of these understanding, not understanding, all of these things have at their root a raw, unformed, sensational phenomenon. The magic is the way in which we shape these raw and kind of wild, roiling, rising and falling of energetic, sensational experience into a storyline. And when we are afflicted by this conviction that what happens here is of huge importance to us. It's important that it go this way and not that way and so forth. When we are afflicted with that, the storyline is seen to be our punishment or our reward. When that goes, then the storyline is just a storyline, and we begin to see what lies underneath of that, and we begin to see the magnificent way in which consciousness plays within these lives, as these lives coming and going and changing colors and changing shape and changing position and all of that underneath the storyline. This is what I'm not sure I'm going to say it very well now either, but this is what I have not yet been able to express as clearly as I would like to. This recognition that life is the vichara. Life is the way in which eternal awareness manifests itself. That's what life is, and that's what the vichara is. The vichara is the endless exploration of the way in which these lives blossom and ramify, and not in order to get an answer to anything, not in order to get free of or attain anything, but just for the sheer joy of seeing it all. And in the absence of this underlying conviction that I'm in danger here, then the seeing of it all and the way in which consciousness, personal consciousness, applies thought and storyline and qualities and understanding and relationship and so forth to this essentially chaotic manifesting is finally reveals itself to be exactly the realization that I have sought. And so anyway, I'm very happy to hear from you, Nigel, and I'm happy to hear you're doing well, and I'm happy to hear your description of the way things are going. So stay in touch. Let me know how you're doing, okay?
I will do, John. Thanks very much. Love to you both. Ciao.
Okay, anybody else? It's okay if there isn't, but it's okay if there is, too.
We have Don. I'm not sure where he's calling from. Maybe New York.
Hi, John.
Hi, Don. You in New York?
I am in New York. I wrote you an email a few weeks ago concerning past hurts and betrayals and stuff like that, and your answer fascinated me. I really never considered the possibility of sort of dropping the rope and seeking a solution outside the mind. I was always in this game of Donald consulting Donald about Donald and getting crazier by the minute. My question, ever since I was a child, well, let's put it this way. I'm aware that the same guy who had breakfast in 1946 or went to see Mickey Mantle in 1958 or went with his grandkids today, the essence of that person, the Donaldness, has never changed. I've always been fascinated by that. I never really understood what it meant, but it is absolutely unchangeable. Intuitively, I've seen that since I was a child. Now, when you talk about finding your own self, finding your true self or who you are, what I've been doing is focusing religiously, no pun intended, on that aspect of me for quite frequently during the day. I'm a pharmacist whenever I have time, but basically, I guess I need some kind of reassurance. Am I in the right ballpark?
You're not only in the right ballpark, you're right at home plate, Don. You know, I remember now. Yes, Don RX. I get it. I remember now. And I just want to say one thing to clear any confusion up, and that is that if I ever said, look for your true self or your real self or anything along those lines that puts an adjective on self, I should be shot, because that's not at all what I'm suggesting that people do. That's what most spiritual practices speak of, but I'm not interested in most spiritual practices. I'm interested in what works. And what you have just described, I actually used to speak of this quite often, and, you know, things come and go, right? But the fact that everybody, it doesn't matter, everybody universally has the experience that I am the same as I was when I was three. That no matter what's changed about the body, no matter how my mind has got corrupted or twisted or confused or clarified or whatever, no matter what relationships have come to me, no matter what sickness, what health, what anything come to me, the truth is that I am the same as I always was. I have never changed. That, and this is the universal human experience, and this is exactly the experience that I am encouraging everybody to look at. So I'm very happy to hear that. That's exactly it. And in the end, looking there repeatedly will finish the problems. Okay?
Well, first of all, I want to apologize. At no time did you indicate in the letter anything about seeking another or true self. I'm just really conditioned from from the many so-called paths I've tried over the years. So I want you to know two things. Intuitively, your stuff really, and I hate the word in this term, but it resonated with me. I was on another website and someone just typed in John Sherman. And so I went to your website, and it resolves a lot of things to me. Your response was very gracious. I knew there was no solution in the mind, because in reality there really was no problem. It used to be just words. It's starting to have substance. As a result of that, my wife and I hope to see you in November. I hope that works out. Thank you, John.
You're very welcome, and I would love to see you in November, and I hope it works out, too. Okay, anybody else?
We got Nancy calling from California.
Hi, Nancy.
Hi, John. Hi. Good. I wish I actually had something to say other than that I love you, and just it seems so... It's so wonderful to just have the contact with you that I couldn't let it go by without saying thank you.
Well, you're very welcome, and saying I love you is always never to be disparaged. I love you too, and I'm very grateful that you're here, really. So, anything else?
I just think that we're all left probably without words. I know every time I have an interchange with you, it's like nothing really remains to hold on to. You know what I mean? Like everything's not exactly turned upside down, but in a way. And so that I don't usually have many words anyway, unless I try to write and, you know, like you see, and then I have probably too many words, but maybe you could comment on if, do you think what I asked you about is there any, well, it seems to me at this moment that every way is a way to explore or to, yeah, to explore, let's say. I guess the question was, I in my writing to you, I've often, I get real, you see, kind of excited or something, and I don't know what I'm saying, but sometimes when I don't know what I'm saying or I don't know what I'm typing or it seems that it's kind of like a trick in which I can see that I do know something and it's very self-evident. Do you know what I mean?
Well, I think I know what you mean, but I don't think it has much to do with the inquiry. The inquiry is not to give you knowledge of anything or even understanding of anything. And I'm really happy that you bring this up because this is, again, one of the ways in which the old, you know, you said it turns things upside down. Well, the inquiry, the vichara, actually does turn things upside down. It turns things upside down from the view that the problem is in something I'm doing or something I'm thinking and so forth, to the possibility that the problem is nothing more than a mistaken opinion that has somehow caused such horrendous effects. It's just a mistaken opinion that can be corrected by bringing that opinion into contact with the reality that it's mistaken about, sort of. So it's not that I really am not suggesting that the purpose of the inquiry is to give you knowledge or to confirm a knowing that you already have. I don't have any problem with any of that. It's just kind of not what the inquiry is about. The inquiry is about ridding you of the underlying mistaken inference that the life is the problem and that you're in danger because of it. And the solution, the method is entirely mechanical. It's not spiritual. It doesn't have any spiritual aspects to it. It doesn't have any spiritual payoff to it. The method is the bringing of personal consciousness in contact with this reality and the loosening of this false inference, this inference that's based on wrong assumptions. Now, what happens as a result of that within personal consciousness itself, within your mind, can be quite dramatic. And it can be quite good, and it can be quite scary, and it can be all kinds of things. It can confirm things. It can seem to deny things. It can do a lot of things. But all of those things are just things that are happening in the life. It's just the way in which this life is unfolding. It's just the characteristics of this life, this consciousness, this personal consciousness as it unfolds. It's neither good nor bad. It will not bring you happiness and it will not bring you grief. The vichara is all. And identity, settling the issue of identity, is all that this practice is about. Do you follow that?
Yes. It's just that it seems when there's the identity is self-evident, it that keeps changing. Where
right.
I more
and
thought it was...
You once thought what?
I'm sorry, I think I interrupted you and we got mixed up. So you go ahead, John.
The identity, I use the word identity again as a synonym for you. The identity has one activity. There's only one thing that identity does, and that is the continuous exploration of its manifestation as this life. Boy, that sounds really metaphysical, but so be it. That's best I can do right now. The point is not to know the identity. You know, I mean, you are the identity. Already, you are filled with the knowing of yourself. You don't see it for what it is, but you are full entirely of you. There's nothing here but you. And that's identity. You. Existence. Being. You. I like you better than any of them. And when I speak of me, I like me better than any of them. But the vichara is not to correct a mistake about identity. Really, it's not. It's not that you have a wrong idea about identity. It's not misidentification. It's not anything of the kind. It is this underlying sense that that there's something wrong with my life. That there, you know, the fact that we call it my life is a clue. That there's something wrong with my life that needs to be changed, that needs to be fixed. Like, for example, a misunderstanding of my identity. That would be something wrong with the life. It's not a profound matter. It's something wrong with the life. I'm wrong about my identity. If I can get right about my identity, then everything will be okay. You have never been wrong about your identity, never. That's not the problem. The problem is this underlying, nagging phenomenon, this inference, this point of view. And the point of view is corrected by bringing the point of view into continuous contact with actual identity, about which you really had no confusion. So that the purpose of the inquiry is not to clear up your confusion about your identity. The purpose of the inquiry is to bring personal consciousness, to bring the wrong idea, the mistake, into contact with the actuality of identity, which you already know. If you didn't know it, you couldn't look at it. If you didn't know it, you wouldn't know what I was talking about. It's you. And I hope that is somewhat on point to what you're speaking to me about, but correct me if I'm wrong.
You always turn me back to really the only... I don't know, I was laughing along the way. There's nothing I can really hold on to except, like you say, that I'm just here.
Very good. I'm very happy to see you, and believe me, trust me, this will all, you will laugh, and you're doing really well. Okay, anything more?
No, I look forward to the intensive, John.
Me too. Anybody else? One more, if anybody else wants to be that one more, now's the time, and then I'm going to escape. I have a history of escape, you know. Okay. I can't tell you how grateful I am. You know, the work that Carla and I, that is the life of Carla and I, the work that is our life, is nothing more than serving the possibility of bringing the simplicity and total radical turning upside downness of the vichara, of the possibility in our lives of settling the issue of identity. And when I say settling the issue of identity, I don't mean settling it by coming to an understanding. When the issue of identity is settled, the need to settle the identity, the issue of identity disappears. That's all there is to it. And what I refer to as the need to settle the issue of identity is precisely this undercurrent of dissatisfaction with our lives that is the pretty much universal experience of human life. And when the issue of identity is settled, that just goes away. So, speaking with you, whether I speak with you here in this magical venue here, where, look at us. I'm just looking, England, Netherlands, Australia, Western Australia, Spain, Greece. amazing, huh? This is magical. But whether I'm speaking with you in this magical venue of the internet, or speaking with you in person, or speaking with you on the phone, or speaking with you by reading and sometimes responding to your emails, it is speaking with you that develops, evolves, and strengthens the usefulness with which I can make this offer. The effectiveness with which I can speak about these matters, and the usefulness of the work. It can't happen, you see, without you, and that's not only in the kind of silly sense that, of course, if you didn't come, I wouldn't have anybody to speak to, but in the more substantial sense that without these continuing conversations with you, I wouldn't have a clue what to say. I learned what to say by conversation with you. So I am deeply grateful. Our work is our life, and it is a source of endless joy. Meeting with you is the source of endless joy. So I'm very grateful, very happy to be here with you. Very happy to be here in any venue with you. We can change this whole thing, you know. We really can. It's really not necessary to continue doing the same things we have been doing for 5,000 years with the same poor results. And by poor results, I mmean here we are, still here, still doing it, still trying to fix the life. Still trying to find transcendence and transformation, despite the experience of 5,000 years that you would think would give us pause about the utility of spiritual aspiration, as opposed to just practical, pragmatic, self-reliant investigation and reflection on what's real, what's here. Reflection on what I am. One of the wondrous things about the Vichara is that unlike many spiritual practices which seem to require as a precondition for you to silence your mind, for thought to be absent, for you not to think about things, unlike all of those things, the Vichara, feel free to think about it. Really. Feel free to wrestle with it, to think about it, to wonder about it, to make mistakes, to stumble along and try with all your heart. Just look at yourself. Really. You can't do it wrong. I love you all. Carla's going to talk to you for a minute. I love you all. I'll see you again next time.